The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but can the true God really be trusted? Well, I'll tell you, think about this. If there is a God, that means he gave you your conscience, which means he also gave you your sense of right and wrong. Now, we could not possibly be superior to our own creator, so we would have to conclude that God is good, and we would have to conclude that God is loving. And if he's good and if he's loving, then yes, absolutely, God can be trusted. Now, I'm not sure I can say as much about our politicians. President Obama surprised people this week by going on Fox News, of all places, for an interview. Given the way he has talked about this network in the past, I believe this was an act of desperation. Contrary to conventional talking points, Obama realizes all too well that conservatives are not the only ones who watch Fox News. Liberals and independents also watch, and this was a last-ditch effort to get his health care message across. Fox anchor Bret Baier asked Obama some penetrating questions, the kinds of questions our president is not used to getting. He tried to dodge them, but Bret stayed on top of it. That's right. It's time for another episode of Dancing to the Questions and Answers with Barack Obama.
Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question clear and bright. Even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me and answer. Answer with a question.
1492.
What's the year that Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run? Became the hero at the Battle of Bull Run. Learning can be lots of fun. Question me and answer.
A good deal of the scuttlebutt has to do with the fact that Bret Baier interrupted President Obama when he tried to make speeches instead of answering questions. And that's true. Bret Baier did interrupt. In fact, here is a montage of the interruptions. There are actually many of them.
And otherwise.
But, Mr.
And
President, Monday.
Brett, let me finish. 60%.
Mr. President,
let me do something about it.
Insert.
And I could read the exact
but
same
these
emails.
Are real people.
And I've got,
it's not just Washington punditry.
No, listen.
Okay, back
and
to the original
key,
question.
The key, I am not.
You're saying that that's that vote.
For example.
That, so the Connecticut deal is still in.
But
do you know which ones
on
are still
hold on
in,
a second, Brett.
Is my question.
They are.
I know you don't like to talk about process. You called it an ugly process.
Brett,
just last month.
I've got to. We're in charge.
This is
and the reason
of the U.S. economy,
but,
though, sir.
Security.
So how
but
can
so,
you, so, you guarantee
so,
that they're not going to they're going to be able to keep their doctor?
Brett, you got
to
let me finish my answers.
But sir, I know you don't like the filibuster.
I'm trying to answer your questions, and you keep on interrupting for 7 hours.
Mr. President, you couldn't tell me what the special deals are that are in or not
according to their accounting rules.
So you don't buy the CBO or the actuary.
That's healthcare.
But you wanted to change Washington, Mr. President, and now we're doing it.
Wait, Brett, let me finish my answers here.
I apologize for interrupting you so much, sir.
Okay,
I was trying
Brett,
to get the most
job.
For our buck here.
Look, I have mixed feelings about this. Nobody likes to be interrupted. I hate it myself. But sometimes, on the radio, if somebody calls in to make a comment to me about Christianity or some other subject, and instead of allowing us to dialogue, they try to give a speech, it gets frustrating, and a good interviewer will not allow it. For the most part, Obama has not had good interviews. He's taken softball questions from networks like NBC who are in the tank for him. And when he does get stronger questions, he gives speeches long enough and eloquent enough to not really answer the question, all the while trying to make it look like he did answer it. And so Bret Baier had no choice. He had to interrupt the president, or he had to go away with just one more Obama photo op. I liked his comment, "I know you don't like filibustering, Mr. President." Also, notice how he reminded the president that he himself had referred to the healthcare process as an ugly process. That interjected reminder came in the midst of a question about this latest nonsense, the idea of the House voting to deem the bill already voted. Sheer double talk. And Obama was dodging the question with more double talk. But I'll give Obama credit for one thing. There is a question he did answer. Unfortunately, his answer was devastating. Before we play this clip, I need to read to you from the Associated Press, March 13, 2010. President Barack Obama says he wants projects helping specific states yanked from the health care bill Congress is writing. Democratic senators being senators beg to differ. Hey, who says President Obama is inexperienced with military matters? He's great at doing the classic about face. Now, listen to this next exchange with Bret Baier.
That's what they're concerned about.
Do you know which specific deals are in or out as of today?
I am certain that we have made sure, for example, that any burdens on states are alleviated when it comes to what they're going to have to chip in to make sure that we're giving subsidies to small businesses and subsidies to individuals, for example.
So the Connecticut deal is still in.
So that's not going to be something that is going to be in this final package. I think the same is true on all of these provisions. I'll give you some exceptions, though. Something that was called a special deal was for Louisiana. It was said that there were millions of dollars going to Louisiana. This was a special deal. Well, in fact, that provision, which I think should remain in, said that if a state has been affected by a natural catastrophe that has created a special healthcare emergency in that state, they should get help. Louisiana obviously went through Katrina, and they're still trying to deal with the enormous challenges that were faced because of that.
Understand.
But that
do you
action,
know
but,
which
but,
ones
on
are still
hold on
in,
a second, Brett.
Is my question.
I'm giving you an example of one that I consider important. It also affects Hawaii, which went through an earthquake. So that's not just a Louisiana provision. That is a provision that affects every state that is going through a natural catastrophe.
See how it works? Suddenly we're supposed to believe that the deal made with Senator Mary Landrieu is no longer a project helping a specific state. As long as other catastrophe-savage states also qualify for Golden Goose, there is nothing wrong with the Louisiana purchase. I just can't help but make an obvious observation here. When we consider tornadoes, fires, floods, and blizzards, just how many states haven't experienced some kind of natural catastrophe recently? And yet, there is only a small list of states with sweetheart deals. Besides, our government already gives aid automatically to states which absorb large-scale weather damage. How is this a legitimate part of a bill that is supposed to be about personal health insurance of every citizen? And how much money was already poured into Louisiana for Hurricane Katrina before Senator Mary Landrieu shook hands and changed her vote? Truth is, we are dealing with a president who will say anything he needs to say. He wants this health care bill passed. Period. If one set of persuasive promises doesn't work, he simply tries a new one. Later, after the bill passes, he can always explain how we didn't actually hear him say what we thought we heard. Or maybe Obama just figures that between Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, anything he says will sound intelligent. He may have a point. Those two are easy acts to follow. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi has finally conceded that the pair of 1,000-page-plus health care bills, both Senate and House versions, are somewhat on the complex side. Thus, her recent statement, destined to rival the best sound bites of history, "But we have to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it." Can you just picture our forefathers right now? Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and the like must be smiling from heaven, happy and proud to see their legacy in such capable hands. They especially light up when Nancy Dearest explains she's doing this for the American people, even though poll after poll, Tea Party after Tea Party, and town hall meeting after cowardly no-show congressman demonstrate that the American people want nothing to do with a socialist assault on freedom. I guess this healthcare bill is like a Tootsie Roll Pop. The flavor on the outside is different from the chewy, chocolatey center. Then, again, maybe it's not the same. After all, Tootsie Roll Pops taste good, and the last time I checked, no parent had to force their kids to eat a Tootsie Roll Pop. They might have to force them to eat liver or vegetables, but not candy-covered chocolate. Of course, this is only temporary. If Obama-Pelosi care passes, soon the government will start instructing parents what to feed their children, since part of the deal will be the government monitoring our nutritional intake by forbidding certain foods to keep the cost of our fantastic health care to a minimum. Whatever happened to my body, my choice? I guess people only have choices when it comes to killing unborn babies. Our progressive government doesn't feel it has the right to interfere on that one, so they make up for it by interfering with everything else.
All of the kids in the neighborhood say Tootsie Roll Pops are triple good. Triple good. You'll love Tootsie Roll Pops.
One way or the other, they are going to control you. One way or the other. If they can't do it through health care, they'll do it through cap and trade. If they can't do it through cap and trade, then they'll do it through the stimulus package. But they're coming for you one way or the other.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you, get you, get you, get you. One way or another, I'm gonna win you. I'm gonna get you, get you, get you, get you. One way or another, I'm gonna see you. I'm gonna meet you, meet you, meet you, meet you. One day, maybe next week, I'm gonna meet you. I'll meet ya. I will drive past your house, and if the lights are all down.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I'm going to bring on our guest, Greg Jarvis, in just a couple of minutes. As of this moment being toward the beginning of our show, the House of Representatives is voting on this monster health care bill. So we don't know while we're broadcasting what that'll be. It'll probably be sometime during the program or shortly afterwards that they decide. I believe they've got the votes because so many Democrats have been bribed and bought off and arm twisted. If you're listening to us on the internet as a first thing Monday morning or a repeat broadcast Saturday night, obviously you already know the outcome. Well, I'm guessing, but it's not over, even for those of you who are hearing this after the fact, because then the Senate has to deal with this reconciliation thing. And then there's a host of lawsuits because a lot of people believe that this bill is unconstitutional. The very idea of the government commanding you of a product that you have to buy. And there's something like 27, I think maybe even 30 or so states that are planning to sue the United States government, the federal government, if this bill passes. So it ain't over till the fat lady sings. Well, this letter is not from a fat lady, but it is from a woman named Cindy, commenting on my substitute hosting of the Rick Amato show last week. She says, "Bob, I heard the show on Monday night, and it was, as usual, very well done. You had a nice touch and are a great guest host, along with the others Rick has selected to fill in on occasion." Well, I appreciate the encouragement, Cindy. I know that over the radio I say some severe things, but I also try to do it in an entertaining way, so it's always nice to know that the system works. For example, how's this for a system? Today, I'm going to talk about flies. Yes, flies. The Democrats who claim they were against the health care bill. are dropping like flies due to bribery and arm twisting, as I just said a moment ago. We already knew about some of these bribes, such as the Cornhusker kickback, as it's been called, in North Dakota. Now, that one got so much bad press, it has been dropped from the latest version of this insane bill. But the Louisiana purchase is still tucked in neatly, along with other sweetheart deals offered to Connecticut and the like. And these are only the ones that came out in the open. How many others are going on right now while Democrats who were planning a no vote seem to have a miraculous change of heart? Take Dennis Kucinich, for instance. He was a firm no, although not for reasons I like. Kucinich was disappointed that this bill wasn't going far enough, wasn't going to mandate a single-payer, government-run system. In his mind, the current form of the embryonic law was watered down and compromised. But then, by an incredible coincidence, President Obama offered to fly Dennis around on Air Force One all day. They had a grand snip-snorting time together. I think they also stopped off at Disneyland and rode the monorail. And then, watch how the hand is quicker than the eye, Dennis Kucinich announces that he's going to vote for the health care bill after all. No fooling, Dennis? What a surprise. We're all falling out of our chairs here. Since I mentioned Disneyland, I might as well bring you up to date on the latest California adventure. But this one is outside the walls of the Magic Kingdom, over in Central California's San Joaquin Valley. Farms have been dying this last year as our big brother federal government turned off a lot of water to protect a tiny little fish called the Delta smelt. Well, good news. The water is back. I mean, it's kind of, sort of back. Not for everybody, just for some. It's flowing into land that corresponds, by another amazing coincidence, to the congressional districts of Democratic Congressman Dennis Cardoza and Jim Costa. Oh yes, I almost forgot. Both of these guys were leaning toward no votes on health care. Now, they are yes votes. Can we prove what went on behind closed doors? Not yet, not yet. But I sure would have enjoyed being a fly on that wall. Then again, Obama did a good job of swatting a fly during one of his television interviews. Never mind. Well, let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Greg Jarvis, who's also an occasional co-host and a good friend, calling us, as he always does, all the way from Missouri, because that's where he lives. So where the heck else would he be calling us from? Greg, welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Good. How's everything going with you?
Fabulous. Fabulous. Finest frogs here out here in old Missouri.
Okay. And I'm hearing a little static behind you. Do you have one of those remote phones?
No. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm hearing a buzz, but just don't pace around a lot. Sit down still like a good boy while we talk.
Hang on just a minute.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Greg? Greg? Okay, Greg just disconnected himself. Okay. That's great. All right. Just sit tight, Cameron. He'll probably call us right back here. All right, well, the health care bill is going on even as we speak. I shouldn't have said anything. I heard static behind Greg. I shouldn't have opened my big mouth. I heard him, and I understood him just fine, but I did hear static. So here's what's going on with this health care bill. Or actually, you know what? I'll tell you what, Cameron. Let's go to a commercial break, and let's try to get Greg back here. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, and we will be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, WNS Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Okay, we had gotten disconnected from my friend Greg, but he's back to tell us what in Sam Hill happened. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, it was one of those Green Acres moments, you know, up on the telephone pole.
It sounded like one. Yeah, I actually hear you better now, but I have to say I should have just kept my big stupid mouth shut because even though I heard a buzz, I understood you fine. So you know what they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But you were trying to fix something. What were you trying to do?
Oh, I think it was because I was sitting next to the computer or something. But anyway, I was on that wireless phone.
So you went to switch to a phone that's better plugged in?
Yeah, one that's hardwired in, and I'm not used to really switching phones.
So how did you get disconnected? I've just got to ask.
I can't tell you, Bob. It's really technical.
We need to ask Mr. Kimball and Mr. Haney.
Yeah,
gee, Mr. Douglas, it looks like we got disconnected, and the reconnection fee will only be $5.
Hey, I hope that commercial was planned and not just to cover my blunder.
So. It was planned to cover your blunder, actually, but we would have played it later on in the program when you blundered some other time, so it's okay.
We can take our blunder early.
That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we better talk about something solid real fast here.
Okay. Well, you know what? I got a topic today.
Okay.
And, you know, with politics, and you're talking about politics, and you're talking about people selling out and biases and people arguing and making deals and going back and forth, you certainly wouldn't see any of that in the church now, would you? Anyone arguing, not getting along, bickering?
Oh, no, we never see politics in the church. The church just exemplifies the kingdom of Christ 24 hours a day, 2,000 years.
Thousands of years. And you'll know they're Christians by their love.
No, Christians suck rags with two straws like everyone else does, unfortunately. Human beings are human beings, and whenever human beings organize, in fact, even within the church, it's kind of interesting because back when I was pastoring, I tended to resist having church meetings. We had small meetings. If people wanted to come and talk to the elders or talk to me, they could. But I resisted great big meetings where we said, let's just talk about how we're feeling about the church. What are your gripes? Because I'll tell you, Greg, there's something adversarial about bringing a group of people together. People will say things in front of a group that they wouldn't say to you looking at you over a cup of coffee, looking at you in the eye one-on-one.
Right. It's like getting behind the wheel of a car. You just become a different animal.
Yeah, like Goofy in that old Disney training film.
Or like me.
You became a monster. Yeah, I'm not at my best when I'm driving. I'm hoping that when I'm driving that those won't be the clips from my life that God shows on Judgment Day. After all, Lord, there are so many other wonderful outtakes to use.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to sit in on that one. So, one of the things I'd heard lately was a topic or a term, worship wars. Wars about variations in how we worship, how people are at odds about all that. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's not so subtle. Sometimes I think if Christ came back today and walked around the churches, I don't think he would even be allowed to dialogue with many of them.
It's funny you should say that because it's forcing me to almost do a shameless plug. I am performing a one-man drama at my church in just a couple of weeks about Jesus Christ being interviewed by four clergymen. And
oh,
it's
really?
Very much like his relationship with the scribes and Pharisees and Sadducees.
Okay, well, that is shameless, but I didn't know anything about it. So.
You didn't, so it's unplanned.
Right.
It's just that I spontaneously exploited it, and that's where the shamelessness came from.
That's true, but you did it well.
Well, thank you. Well, not too well, since we had to explain to the audience what we just did.
So yeah, how's that play going to go? Pretty well, I would assume, and reflect kind
well,
of...
Well, this character never comes out. The rumor has it that people were calling him Jesus Christ. He refuses to acknowledge it or deny it. And okay. the clergy are just freaking out. So four prominent men come. See, I'm shamelessly plugging it again because you asked me.
Well, don't give away too much.
Oh, I'm not going to give away too much. This is just the very beginning, actually. Two of them are from the World Council of Churches. Well, those churches have all gone liberal and don't even believe in the Bible anymore. But then two of them are evangelicals who will swear up and down a totem pole that they do go by the Bible, and yet they pile on all their traditions, such as how we must worship. How's that for a segue back to where you were?
Well, it's a darn good one, Bob. And again, that was spontaneous too. You're just a regular Wild Wester. You'd make it great out here in the Midwest, you know.
Now I'm going to have to do another plug because one of our new commercials has the Wild Wild West theme song playing in it, and you're going to hear that later on in today's show. Greg, the Holy Spirit must be clicking with both of us right now.
He must. I mean,
unlike those who don't walk in the Spirit, which is what a lot of worship leaders say to those who don't seem to be truly worshiping. And there's another segue back to worship for you.
Well, I'm feeling rather inept with the whole thing, but yeah.
What's been going on? Seriously, is this something going on in your church? And you don't have to mention the name of your church.
Well,
over
actually,
the air,
yeah, it was a topic that was being discussed, and they were going over the different types of worship.
Now, what kind of church are you in? Is it? Do they have a full worship band, or is it the little old lady with the organ and the hymns? Or?
It's a. They're presenting. It's a traditional church with that tries to do a contemporary service.
Whoa, that's almost like mixing new wine with old wineskins.
That yeah.
Now me, I'm more on the side of the new wine myself.
Yeah, I'm okay with
because some
wine.
Of those old fossils just ain't gonna die anytime soon, and they're gonna be around a long time.
They do an okay job of mixing it, but the other
not that day, I want them to die, but I wouldn't mind if some of them, what's the word I'm looking for, left the church.
Well, some of them are pretty staunch, and I think they're not going to be leaving anytime soon, even if they passed away. I think they would choose to stay there in the pews, and actually some people I think did pass away and just continue to sit there.
Now, is yours one of those churches that's so hard up for numbers that demon-possessed people, they count more than once, so it looks better on the tally?
No, it's not that, but I will tell you, they do the do-si-do where you get up and turn around and meet and greet people.
Oh, you know, every church does that, even the quote-unquote I've never cared much for that because doesn't that seem kind of impersonal? You're
it
in a
does.
Room with 2,000 people.
Well, that's why I like to come late.
just so you can miss that part.
but this one woman came up, and she said, I go with my mother-in-law, and she said, hello and met me, and that was great, and that she was just so glad to be a Christian. And I was actually kind of warmed by that. I thought that was really nice. But then she went on to say, with much more enthusiasm, how proud she was to be of this particular denomination. And then she walked away and sat down. And it struck me as odd that she would emphasize so much this particular denomination.
Okay, now we just have to ask you, what is the denomination?
Southern Baptist. Bob.
Southern Baptist.
Now, is that a surprise?
I'm not surprised at all. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm an ordained conservative Baptist minister. They're not exactly the same denomination. There's as many different kinds of Baptists as there are different kinds of Christians. But yeah, some denominations tend to feel like, boy, if you're not in our denomination, you don't have it all together. They're not as bad as cults. Cults will say you're not even saved if you're not going to our group. But denominations were supposed to be a good idea. Originally, when the denominational theory was hammered out early in American history, the idea was we're one legitimate alternative expression of Christianity. We have brothers and sisters and cousins that have other alternative expressions. So denominations on paper, in theory, are not that bad. But then you do get the people that think, well, the Apostle Paul was a Southern Baptist, so why aren't you? And you end up getting that kind of thinking, even though the people who started those churches would be turning in their graves to hear somebody say that.
Well, and okay, full disclosure, I was raised as a Northern Baptist. And I don't know if they just wore coats or, you know, bundled up. I really don't remember because I was a little kid, so I don't know what it was.
Well, you know, the issue of the Baptist splitting North to South, and that was the first split, was over slavery. It's interesting. Obviously, the Southern Baptist Church doesn't hold on to slavery anymore, but you'd think they would have at least changed their name. Just call themselves regular Baptist, or just
right,
call
or
themselves
the better
Fred.
Baptist.
How about Fred, the Church of Fred? I mean,
yeah.
Anything, but why hold on to a name that at its inception had to do with holding on to slavery?
I think the name's probably not the best, but maybe because the South is so big, they wanted, you know, to make themselves feel big.
Well, and of course, it's okay for people to feel proud of the South. And I also want to say, before I forget, this idea of churches having the meet and greet, because I know that's where you met this lady. I know it makes a lot of people more uncomfortable than the church thinks it does, but I should say they mean well. So we do want to give Christians credit when they're trying to be friendly, at least.
Well, a lot of things do start off that way, and actually denominations are fine with me. I mean, if I was a non-Christian, though, and I walked into in this day and age, if I drove into a town and you drive down one block and you see this denomination, you drive just two blocks away and you see another denomination, and I was going through a town here close to ours the other day, and within five blocks, there were three different churches, all Christian, just different denominations. And within another three or four blocks, there was another church that was one of the previous denominations. So within eight blocks, you had two churches of the same denomination.
Well, you know, no, I really don't have a problem with that as long as they're getting along. As you know, maybe our audience doesn't know, you and I met when I was doing campus ministry out at UC Santa Barbara, and there was another very big group there, InterVarsity, and we were campus ambassadors. And our groups were different enough that there was room for both of them. And yes, amongst some of the students, there was competitiveness, but between those of us that were leaders running the group, we were not feeling that way. John Bauer, who led InterVarsity, the campus minister, he and I were the best of friends.
We had great
respect for each other. But sometimes you get other people in the peanut gallery that they just kind of flip out like, oh my gosh, if we don't put every Christian in the city into one room, we're not going to have unity. You know.
Yeah, well, and I think if someone didn't know better, didn't know Christianity, didn't know anything about it, but then heard there was this religion, this spiritual group called Christians, but then they saw all these divisions and didn't understand it, they could think, you know, something was really strange.
They would think they were at Starbucks, because there's a Starbucks in every corner.
Well, yeah, but that's a good thing, Bob.
Okay.
Don't be knocking Starbucks.
No, not at all. I'm saying they would have been complimenting the church by comparing it to Starbucks.
Yeah, that's absolutely great.
Starbucks is my office. I'm not going to get in bed with them. Oh, that's where I do all my work in Starbucks.
Wait a minute. I thought Denny's was your office.
Denny's is my late night office after Starbucks closes, but Starbucks is my chain of offices in the normal part of the day.
Okay. All right. Well, the thing I like about denominations is just that, is that there's a different flavor. They emphasize, maybe one emphasizes music and the other emphasizes a style of worship. It had been a long time since I'd been to a Baptist church because as soon as I walked in, the feel was a little different. And then at the end...
Oh, like you felt like you were about to fall asleep? Was that the feel?
No. This guy's a really good preacher. He's very good and good points, but at the very end... there's that altar call every
Oh, yeah, the Baptist. He could be talking to a group of 50 people, and he knows they've all been born again for 20 years, and he will give an altar call.
Yep. So that was interesting. But no, the flavor, the different flavor of different denominations, that's fine. But the fervor that this woman expressed, how this was the one, I can see how people can at times defend their own denomination or their own beliefs or their own traditions or whatever more than the actual relationship with God.
Yeah, because I think, you know, people have different motives for becoming Christians. The motive is supposed to be we want to turn from our sin and have a relationship with God. All too often, there are people who want friends and want family, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And yes, the church is supposed to provide that. But if at the end of the day, that's the only reason we're there, there's going to be problems down the road.
Absolutely. Well, and if you're going because it's simply a change of pace or it's reflecting something that's a little more of what you like or enjoy or whatever, that's fine. But if you hold on to it so tightly, it becomes like a point that Paul was talking to the Corinthians about. And he was saying, you know, they were saying, hey, I'm a follower of Paul, and I'm one of Apollos, and I'm of Cephas, and no, wait, I'm of Christ.
Okay, hold that point, Greg, and we'll find out what you're really of when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined with my friend and occasional co-host, Greg Jarvis. Greg, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thanks.
Quoting the passage from Corinthians where we see that this problem happened even in the early church, which is an interesting point, the church schisms, church divisions, people saying, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos. I always hear people say, well, our church is a New Testament church. And I like to ask, which one? Corinth? Galatia, Thessalonica, neither of those churches were painted in great lights in the New Testament.
Right. Well, and that's a good point. That's the main point, is that this has been going on for some time. And anytime somebody emphasizes something other than Christ, that's a problem. I mean, Paul writes, has Christ been divided? And were we baptized in the name of Paul? And so I throw in, not to this gal, I didn't say anything. I smiled and shook her hand and sat back down uncomfortably. But I would pose the same thing. Was she baptized in the name of the Southern Baptist Church, the Northern Baptist, Conservative Baptist, or any other Lutheran, Methodist, whatever other group? Was anyone baptized in the name of those churches? And, well, the answer is no. And yet, they feel so attached at times that that becomes the focal point, that the teaching becomes all important, and that if Christ came back today, do not talk about your play again. If Christ came back today...
Hey, did you know I'm writing this play about Christ? Oh, never mind.
No, I hadn't heard, Bob. Is it soon or what?
Not soon enough to justify how much I've been talking about it.
Well, there you go. But if he was to come back today, I doubt that he would get along with too many church leaders. But again, that's nothing new either. He sort of disrupted the church when he came the first time, didn't he?
Well, he disrupted the Jewish synagogues. But, and this is where the church has missed it over the years. So much of the Gospels is devoted to Jesus' dialogues with the scribes and the Pharisees. And they were the clergy of his day. And what happened was the church got anti-Semitic over the years, like, oh, see, Jesus had a problem with the Jews. No, a lot of the Jews were the ones following Christ. Christ's original disciples, the original church was Jewish. The leadership, the clergy, he had trouble with. And I believe he would have trouble with a lot of the clergy today. And I don't mean to be pointing fingers. I'm a clergy, technically. I'm a full-time Christian apologist. I'm a licensed, ordained minister. As I said, for those of you who just joined us, I'm even a licensed Baptist minister.
I didn't know that, Bob.
Well, somebody may have just tuned in who was driving.
Sorry about
so
that.
I thought that people on both sides of the break should know. But I was brought up Jewish myself and converted to Christianity and got involved with the Baptists because the people that led me to Christ happened to be going to a Baptist church. Being a Baptist was never that important to me, but that is where I got my license and ordination from.
Well, and like you say, he had a problem with the clergy, and that was really... And it was because of what they were, how they were living, what they were teaching, which was not exactly what they were living. It was the hypocrisy and putting burdens on people that they weren't living themselves, and frankly, not living the way God had intended them. Emphasizing a structure, and even today, emphasizing a structure a way of doing things, a belief system over and above that personal relationship. You're going to run into problems. And I've often said the hardest people to reach for God, I believe this when I met you on campus because I was one of those people, the hardest people to reach for God are the people in the church.
People that grew up in the church. And throughout history, most of the persecutions against Christians came from the church at the time when the church had that kind of power in the Middle Ages, in the Renaissance, etc. Now, that's changing now, and most of the persecution against Christianity is coming from secular nations and from Muslim nations. But throughout most of our history, our persecution was actually coming, I wouldn't say from fellow born-again Christians necessarily, but from people who were using the name of Christ. A lot of people who use the name of Christ are not truly saved. Jesus told us that in Matthew 7. But it's also true that those of us who are saved, who are born again, we still have a lot of sin, and we haven't attained any kind of sinless perfection. And unfortunately, we work that out in the political struggles of the local churches.
Yeah. Yep. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. To a degree, it's unfortunate, but that's what we find ourselves in. As long as we acknowledge that, as long as we're aware of that, and as long as we're working with that, I don't have a problem with it. It's when people dig their heels in to a particular structure and belief system and tradition and set that above and beyond that relationship with Christ.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with tradition. I mean, when I'm having Thanksgiving dinner, I want turkey. It's probably the only time of the year I even feel like eating turkey. I'd be disappointed if I didn't have it. But if I got up and gave a sermon one morning or did a radio show where I said, if you don't eat turkey for Thanksgiving, you're not honoring God, and thanking God is what Thanksgiving's all about, that would be kind of nutty. But we hear those kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. And I think it comes from, what you said, if you got up and did that, you would be pushing an agenda, pushing your particular agenda. And we run into problems like that when people do it within a church and when people do it in different denominations.
Now, what is your opinion about why they do it? Do you think they're saying to themselves they have an agenda, or do you think that this is something they're doing sincere and they truly believe they're being spiritual?
I think most people are sincere. I think we all, and I get this the phrase from my wife, Leslie, we all want to matter. Everyone wants to matter. And to matter, a lot of times we want to also feel right. Because no one wants to walk through life and think, I'm kind of a wrong guy. I mean, what I believe is wrong, what I do is wrong, but that's okay. I'm okay with it. No, we want to think what we think is right. Otherwise, why believe it?
Want attention. And a good way to get attention is to say, hey, I don't feel that everybody's walking as closely with God as I am. Nobody says it quite like that.
Well, but I don't know that it's always attention, because you have some shy people or behind-the-scenes people, but what you do have is you have the people that want to matter and want to be right and want to be justified. And if I can get you to believe like me, or at least to agree with me, I feel okay. But if I'm in dialogue with you and you start throwing questions at me, that then I have to question my faith, or you're questioning my faith, the first reaction is to get defensive, because I may or may not know the answers and be able to defend them or not. But if you attack what I believe and the structure that I hold to, then there go the underpinnings of my feeling of security and what I believe. So I think the people that push their agenda, I think they're sincere. But I think at a subconscious level, sometimes they're pushing it so that they feel okay, almost to say, this is right, isn't it? Of course it is. And then they feel better. They feel empowered. I think that's going on at times. I don't think there's a lot of mean-spirited people out there.
No, they mean well. We'll continue this discussion with Greg Jarvis when we return.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm joined with Greg Jarvis. So, Greg, you were talking about the fact that you'll sometimes challenge people to think about their position. And it seems that a lot of times people feel safer when there's security. Do you think that a lot of Christians today, I know this is true of people in general as a species, but is it also true of Christians today that they don't like to be challenged to think, that they want to just know that if they pin these five or six things on the refrigerator that they're supposed to do and that everyone else is supposed to do, that that's what being a Christian is all about?
Well, I think that's a lot of times how we're brought up by default. You know, you're kind of conditioned that way. You know, this is the belief, this is what you should believe, and if you believe this, you're okay. And that's why I say the hardest people to reach are those in the church, because they're either brought up that way, or they come into the church and the church teaches them, and by the church I mean any church, teaches them certain guidelines, certain principles, and as long as they have those in place, they're okay. And it wasn't until I got out of the church I was in when I was a kid and came up to college and actually had my views challenged, and learned of other views and actually learned what Scripture actually teaches, which wasn't always taught. That was enlightening to me, because a lot of times my church and other churches tend to teach even what's in Scripture by picking and choosing and kind of teaching the things that already support or support their already believed ideas. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people don't want to be challenged because it's comfortable, it's convenient, and quite frankly, who likes to work at things? I mean, who likes to work at relationships? In a marriage, it's a lot nicer if you understand the parameters, if you understand what your wife or your husband expects, and you just sort of play along and be nice. But when you get into the thick of it and you begin to dialogue and it gets heated sometimes or it gets off onto other tracks, it's difficult. And we tend to shy away from that, I think, because, again, we want to not only feel like we matter, but we want to feel solid in what we believe and comfortable. And frankly, I don't think that's where God's at. I think he always challenges us and challenges our views and our beliefs because he's so far above where we're at, and we are so imperfect and so blindsided that it's only through discourse with other people, along with that dynamic relationship with God, that we can kind of navigate a very difficult course. Otherwise, we can certainly adhere to 5 to 10 principles taped up on the refrigerator, reminded in the bathroom at the mirror. But that's kind of a shallow, non-exciting existence. I mean, I think. Personally.
Well, not only shallow and non-exciting, but it's diametric to what the New Testament is supposed to be all about. One of the biggest misconceptions is that the New Testament is here to give us New Testament laws to replace Old Testament laws. Now, it's true that we're also reading Scripture in a book that we call the New Testament. But when Jesus came, Testament meant covenant or agreement. And the new relationship with God was that in the past, God put a perimeter around your will by giving you certain rules and regulations. But Jesus says, now I have something better for you, a relationship with God himself. So it's not about getting up and saying, well, if I do these 10 things or 8 things in my refrigerator, that'll be the will of God. God has the right in his relationship with us to call us to do different things each day. And what he tells us to do one day may not be the same as another day. What he tells me to do wouldn't be the same as what he tells you to do. Having said that, there are some things as Christians we must agree on. And as I was listening to you talk, I think we're talking about the difference between unity and uniformity. Unity says the important thing is Christ. We can have differences about modes of worship. Not all Christians have to have the same politics. Not all Christians have to have the same view about spiritual gifts or Calvinism or dispensationalism or all these other theologies. But we must agree on who Jesus is, why he came, and how we are saved. We must agree on that, but it's a relationship with this Jesus. And what we hear from Jesus is we're to make the most loving, most unselfish, most sacrificial decision we can from day to day. And there's a million different ways to do that and a million different ways to worship. And a lot of times worship is just about taste. Some people like a certain kind of music, a certain kind of instrument. Some people like the band. Some people only want a guitar. Some people would rather listen to the organ play a hymn, and that's okay. We need to allow for a variety of worship. That's why I think churches that have multiple services, different kinds of services, are doing the right thing. They're onto something.
Well, I think that's exactly right, uniformity versus unity, and we definitely want to be unified. And I think that's, I mean, circling back around to what started your show, I think the political arena could use a lot more of that, because I'm really not political at all, but the things I hear are very frustrating. The things that I think, and I'm not, you know, really politically minded, I don't have the answers, just some of the questions, but when I bring those up to people I'm around, it's like, yeah, we all seem to be in agreement. What's going on with Washington? Well, they seem to be pushing agendas, making deals, completely losing sight of what is good for America, for Americans, and that they are our servants. How can we be unified with our differing opinions? That said, it'd be nice if they'd hammer it out. Again, I know what you talked about, and that is bipartisan. Things don't have to be bipartisan. They can sometimes a Democrat can have a better answer than a Republican.
Well, yeah, and you know, we have to be able to truly believe what we believe and not sell our soul. But I find that politically, people use the same holy language as Christians, only it's different terms. Like bipartisanship sounds so nice. And it usually gets defined as you should do things my way. When a Christian in the church says we need to have unity, what they usually mean is uniformity and you should do things my way. They don't usually mean we should sit down and talk to each other and really learn from each other.
So in each instance, I would say the people have not done what God calls us to do, and that is to die to ourselves and to focus on what's best for others and be directed by him on a daily basis. I like the way he says, do not be conformed by this world, Paul writes. Do not be conformed by this world, using the verb conform. The world will conform us if we do nothing, but be transformed by the continual renewing of our mind. And, of course, that renewal of our mind is through Scripture and the Holy Spirit, to be different people and not pushing our own agenda.
And we have to look at the Scripture in context. You were talking before about how people are kind of cherry-picking their scriptures. And, you know, it's interesting because Protestants tend to bash Catholics all the time. But actually, in a lot of ways, and I'm not a Catholic, but I'm going to defend the Catholics for a moment. How's that for unity? I'm going to defend the Catholics. The Catholics will admit that they have certain traditions, what they call apostolic tradition, which to them is every bit as important as the Bible. And their traditions are just as authoritative as the Bible. Now, I don't agree with that, but at least they admit what they're doing. The evangelicals claim that everything they have is from the Bible, but then usually when you hear evangelicals arguing theology from people with other churches or other theological persuasions, 9 out of 10 times I hear them quoting their pastors and not the Bible. They may actually be quoting a verse, but they're quoting the way their pastor interpreted it from them.
Right.
We've got time for you to make maybe a quick 20-second closing statement here, Greg.
Well, I mean, it's my hope that that I, in my personal life, can die to myself and not push my own agenda, but be available, be a living sacrifice to God, and the Holy Spirit work through me. And I got to tell you, I believe you do that, and I just tell you I love you, brother.
I love you, too, and always have a great respect for you and your insights. Come back on our show again really soon.
Will do. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Greg. Take care. All right. We'll see you next week, everybody.